Today's daf in Masechet Yoma, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Samachet. We're holding right at the bottom of daf Samach Zayin Amud Beit, and we were talking about the Mishnah. We had our Halakha Mishnah yesterday, in which we discovered that the Kohen goes next to the what was after the Avodas Adam. He goes back to the Basar that is left of the Korbanos that he brought, the par and the sayer, and both of those are chataot hanisrafot, and therefore they have to be taken out in order to be burned. But of course, before we burn them, we have to make sure that we have their emurim. And so the next thing that the Kohen Gadol did was he takes the emurim out and he puts it into a megis, and he doesn't bring it yet on the mizbeach because there's an awful lot to be done before that, as we'll see. And then he hands it over to be burned. Now, at that point, it doesn't say anything about what we do in terms of hefshet v'nituach. So remember, when it comes to an oila, that an oila where we're going to be burning the evorim of the oila on the mizbeach apnimi. So over there, the Torah says beferish v'hefshit. You have to first be mafshit. You have to skin, take off the skin, and v'nitach otal nitachya, and then you cut it up. But it doesn't say anything about that. It says you burn it. So now, how do you burn it? You just like take the whole body and burn it, or what? So the Mishnah says that in order to bring these karbonas out, we first braided, so to speak, the hands and the feet, tied them together, twisted them, put a pole between them, and then you had a Kohen on one end, Kohen on the other, carrying each one on a pole, sort of four people in total. Two Kohanim that were carrying on either end the pole of the par of the Kohen Gadol, and two that were carrying the Sa'ir that is Nisraf. They walk side by side, as we'll see, and when they get to the Beit HaDeshen, that's the question. What do they do? So Omer Rabbi Yochanan, yesterday we had Kamin Kliya, and Tana Lo Haya Minatchan, so we started at those two dots now, Tana Lo Haya Minatchan Nituach Psar Ola, that when they got there at the mokum of the Sreifa, they would actually cut the body into the normal cuts, but they would not remove the skin. Ela or algabe basar. How do we get that? What gives us the idea that there is a nituach at all? I mean, it just says that you should burn them. And if there is a nituach, what gives us the idea that we're supposed to do it in this unique way, in which we leave the basar on and we're menateach, minonimili. D'tanya, Rebbe Omer, ne'emar kan or ubasar v'perish, ve'ne'emar lahalan or ubasar uperish. Now, if you take a look in the psukim that deal with the places where we need to burn, and there we find that we have sort of almost a mantra, that wherever we're going to be taking things out. So over here in Achrimot, it says, Espara chatat, vesira chatat, asher huvat amam lechaper bakodesh, yotzi el michutz lamachane, vesarfu be'esh, and listen carefully, vesarfu be'esh, et orotam, ve'et besaram, ve'et pirsham. Now, when it comes to the other mitzvahs that we have, and we have the mitzvahs that are nogea, the other sreifot, by the power of the Kohen Mashiach, who makes a mistake in Hoira, and he has a special korban, which is a par, and it's Nisraf, remember? And it says there the same parts, that ora par, that ko besoro, al rosho, val kira'av, vekirbo, ufirsho. So therefore, we have now a clear-cut gzereshava that is comparing the two in which the Torah defines sreifa. So just like over there, it's a given by the parko in Mashiach, malahalan, ayadei nituach, but only ayadei nituach, velo ayadei hefshet, without taking off the skin before, and in a moment we're going to ask, well, where does it say that over there? Afkanso by Yom Kam, Yom Kippurim, the same thing is true. The par v'sa'ir are the ones who vam damam bifnim, it's ayadei nituach, lo ayadei hefshet. Says the Gemara, how is it so much a given that when it comes to the par kohen Mashiach, that the halacha is that you do, first of all, A, that you do a nituach, because that isn't clear anywhere, and B, that when you do that nituach, it's done in a strange way. Every other nituach that we know is butchering the way you normally would. You cut up. You don't leave skin, obviously, on. First, you flay the animal, and then you cut the parts into the appropriate parts. And yet over here, we do this weird thing. So where do we get that from? So hataminala, the Tanya. So here, we start with the Braita that's describing the par koin Mashiach. And it says, v'kirbo ufirsho v'hotzi. Now, what we have over there, if we combine the two psukim, is that first it says, the pasuk that we quoted a moment ago, that or hapar, that ko besoro, al rosho, vi al kira'av, vi kirbo, ufirsho. And then the next word is, vahotzi et kol hapar. So now what that means is, what we're understanding is that those things that were listed are part of the kol hapar. I mean, what that means is that we don't do anything to it. We take it out whole. Malamit shemotzi or shalem. So then what other explanation is? It's got to be, okay, all of that, kol hapar, we take that whole thing out, and it's still whole. That means that certainly in the Azara itself, we do not do a nituach that we would normally do. Okay, so if that's the case, it also says visarafoto. So then the following pasuk that talks about the visarafoto would mean the same thing that I took out, a whole par. Take it out whole, burn it whole. So Yochol Yisrafenu Shalem, you might think that that indeed is what you're supposed to do. Ha! Therefore comes along the pasuk to tell me, nope, it's not that way at all. Because notice that Ne'emar kan Rosho Uchra'av. We said that Or Hapar, that Kol Besoro, Al Rosho V'Al Kra'av, and then it says Kirbo Upirsho. Now that business about Rosho Kra'av, that doesn't show up all over. You know where that shows up? That shows up in the normal din of what we do with the basar of an oila. That's where it stresses the idea of Rosh Hashanah. So it says even by the par of the Kohen Mashiach, it mentions Rosh Hashanah. And then when the Torah describes the dinim of the Karban Oila, it says exactly the same thing. It goes out of its way to talking about et harosh v'etapoder, and then it talks about ukirbo uchra'av. So now that seems to imply that we're going to be treating the par of the Kohen Mashiach the way we treat the Oila. So over there, the Torah specified it has to be al yedei nituach, and that is a pasuk that is mifurash, v'ifshit et ha'ola, v'nitach ota l'nitachea. There's no question over there what you got to do. It's all spelled out. So if that's the case, if we're comparing it to the oil, it should be spelled out over here too. And we should say, Afkan ha'yedei nituach. So it must mean that we did cut it up. Okay? That would mean that if I have to take it out whole, it must mean that I do the nituach at the point that I get to the sreifa. Now, if that's the case, how do I do the nituach of an oila? It says, v'yiv shitota v'nitach utal n'tachea. So then why not bite the bullet and say that imala halan ayadei hefshet, afkan ayadei hefshet. You can't do a nituach without first doing the hefshet. So then that should be true over here. How are you learning out only half of the idea? The Torah specified v'kirbo ufirsho. What? How does that prove any kirbo ufirsho? That's just identifying the parts. How in the world does that prove anything? My Talmud, Omrif Papa, look. The mixture over here is weird mixture, isn't it? I mean, you're talking about the Rosh and the Kra'ayim, which sounds like, you know, you've got this beautiful Korban Oila kind of thing. And then you talk about the innards and the waste material that's inside of the stomachs. I mean, what in the world? What kind of weird combination is that? That's what it's coming to tell me, says Rav Papa. That's the whole diuk. You obviously understand that we are not interested in pouring out the stomach contents and making a stinking mess over this whole burning of the carbon. So clearly when the Torah said kirbo ufirsho, it means that you leave the peresh inside of the digestive system, right? So why mix that with the discussion of the parts of the carbon? Because it's coming to tell me that in the same way the pirsho is meant to remain in the kirbo, therefore, when it talks about also the or and the basar, it means exactly the same thing, to keep the basar in the or. And that's the whole idea. Why do we mention that thing about Or HaPar VeKol Besoro, together with this idea of Kirbo Pirsho. Beautiful diuk. Keep the Or and the Basar the same way that you're meant to be talking about parts that remain whole, not the whole animal that remains whole, because that we learn out from the Ayla. But those parts remain whole in the sense that whatever is attached to them or within them is not removed. So in the same way, we're not going to open up the stomach contents. We're not going to open up, so to speak, then remove the basar from the Or. Beautiful. Okay, next thing we said. At what point do the people that carry out, we had this whole discussion before, where we were talking about the dinim of the Sarah Mishnaleach, we talked about at what point is he Metame Begodim, and over there we have different inyanim mentioned in the Pasuk. At what point do the people who carry out the Evarim, of course they're carrying it with the poles and so on, at what point are they Metame Begodim? That's what the Mishnah says. So the Tanna Kamma says, the moment they go out of the Kotel HaZorah, they're automatically Metame Begodim, even though they didn't do anything about the Sreifa as yet. Whereas Rabbi Shimon said in the Mishnah, no, you need to wait until the Ur, is Nitzat Berubam. So that means most of it has to already be aflame before we will call him Metame Begodim. So now the question is, where does all this come from in the Torah? Tanna Rabbanan. Yotzi el michutz l'machaneh. So we're talking about the parvaser shiyom ha-kippurim. We're supposed to now oro b'saro and son yotzi el michutz l'machaneh. Michutz l'machaneh. Now, wait a minute. Michutz l'machaneh is a lashon yachid. One machaneh. So then, if it's one machaneh, so then that would mean we burn it right outside of the door to the Azara, right? One machaneh. So we would actually burn it maybe in Ezra's Noshim. Tanna Rabbanan. Yotziel michutz l'machaneh. Does this really make sense? Asks the Tana. Lahalana tanotein lehem shalosh machanot. Look, when we were talking about the par helam davar shel tzibur, and when we were talking about the par kohen mashiach, we're over there, we also have to take them outside of the machaneh and burn them. But over there, you need shalosh machaneh. They have to go out of all three machaneh. They have to go out of machaneh shechina. So they go out of the Azorah, out of Machane Leviya, and they have to leave the Har HaBayit, and out of Machane Yisroel, they have to leave Yerushalayim itself, and only there can you burn it. And over here, all you need is Michutz L'Machane? I don't get it. I mean, you just walk out from the Machane Shechina, and now you'd already burn it? I can't believe it, because I know that that's not so, because I know that we actually have a Gezeirah Shavah of all of the Purim to each other. Because the Torah compares achatat, achatat, achatat. Every time it talks about it, it always calls it the same word to tell us that they all have the same halacha. So how do you explain the fact that it says amichutz l'machaneh? I mean, at least it should be merames, amichutz l'machanot, or mention the machaneh a number of times. How could that be? We know that it isn't true, and we know that it needs to be chutz mishalosh machanas. So im kein, why then does it say michutz l'machaneh? I mean, so don't say it. If you're going to be learning it out, you're going to be learning out the Sawyer of Nisraf and the Sawyer Nasa Bifnim, which is Nisraf, and the Par of the Kohen Gadol, which is Nisraf. You're going to be learning it out anyway from where to burn it from the other Parim, from Gezeirah Shavah. So then don't say something that's so misleading. Why are you telling me michutz l'machaneh? Ah, that's the important point. The important point is to tell me that in this case, the moment you go out of the machaneh, michutz l'machaneh, you're already part of that burning. So rafotah michutz l'machaneh, walk out of the door, you're already metame begodim. That's the makar of the Tanna Kamma in our Mishnah. Okay, all right, that's very impressive, but I mean, how really do we know that all over it's shalosh machaneh? But it never says beferish shalosh machaneh anywhere. So why do you get the idea that it's shalosh machaneh? You're telling me it's a given that when it comes to the par of the Kohen Mashiach, and when it comes to the par Helim Davar Shel Tzibur, that over there it's definitely shalosh machaneh. Ah, you forgot? That's a braita, the Tanya. So when we're talking about the par of the Kohen Mashiach, Torah says, Votzi et kol apar, this is the puzzle we were talking about before, Votzi et kol apar el michutz l'machaneh, El Mekom Tahar, El Shefach HaDeshen, Visarafoto alaitim ba'esh al shefech adeshen yisaref. I'm quoting the whole pasuk because we're going to be thinking about what those different words mean and the concept of shefech adeshen in a moment. So we'll keep that in mind. But it only says al mechutz lamachane. It only says once al mechutz lamachane. But nonetheless, the Tana asserts that means by definition chutz l'shalosh machanot. You know, wait a minute. I asked you to justify that. Ta'omer chutz l'shalosh machanot. Thank you very much. I'm happy to hear your opinion, but maybe that's not what it means. It says mechutz l'machanah. So eino ela chutz l'machanah achat. Ah, but the very next parsha is the parsha of the Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibur, right? Now the Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibur, it repeats the words el mechutz l'machanah. Now don't tell me that I need to know that it's burnt chutz l'machanah. That's ridiculous, because part of the entire description of the Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibur is to openly state, burn it the way you burnt the previous mentioned par of the Kohen Mashiach. Exactly. Sarafato kasher sarafata par rishon, meaning the above mentioned par. So, you can't get a bigger hekesh than that. There is this beferes. I'm telling you, it's a hekesh. Do the same things. Okay, so fine. So I already know that it's chutz l'machanah. So you're adding a machanah here. Mata melomar el mi chutz l'machanah. You're obviously adding machanah B. So if I only had the first one, I would have said, as soon as you get out of the Azora, now I know, nope, you've got to get into Yerushalayim. Okay, so fine. So now I'll burn it in Yerushalayim, right? No, because look, and this is so interesting, because remember that we have seen this inordinate stress on the idea of the Hotzoas Hadeshen and Truma Hadeshen in Yom HaKippurim in this Masechet, right? Well, it turns out that the idea of the Deshen, and that's why I read that pasuk to you before, the idea of the Deshen is so central to this whole idea of Machane and how we describe the Kedusha of Mokam, because the only other place where it mentions Michutz HaMachane is by Hotza'at HaDeshen. And it says over there also, Michutz HaMachane again. Now, I know that that's true without it needing to be saying Michutz HaMachane, because look, what's the point? She'ein Tamud Lomar. It already said El Shefech HaDeshen. It said that by the Parko and Mashiach, right? And we already know that that's Michutz L'machanah. And it already compared the par of the Eda, Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibur, to the par of the Kohen Mashiach. And we therefore know there too we have an extra machanah, which is called a Shefech HaDeshen. So, you really don't need to tell me that the Shefech HaDeshen is Michutz L'machanah. I got to be awfully dumb not to know that. So all you need to do is to say, take the Deshen on the Mizbeach and put it on the Shefech HaDeshen. I know where that is. If you're adding again unnecessarily, Michutz L'machaneh, what are you telling me? You're telling me Ten Lo Machaneh Shlishit. There's yet a third Machaneh that you're going to have to take it out. So now they all reflect back on each other. So now I know that there are three Machanehs. So now what is the point here, therefore, of saying that El Michutz L'machaneh, since I know, A, that that's not true, it's not immediately Michutz L'machaneh. And I know, B, where it is that it needs to be burned on the Shefech HaDeshen. So what is the point? You're not telling me anything. Aha! It can't mean Chutz L'Arba Machanos, because there are no Arba Machanos. So the only thing that it could be telling me is, the last thing that I'm mentioning, the Din of Tuma, that he should be Bechabesit Begadav, and so on and so forth, that is the Din of Michutz L'machaneh, indeed Machaneh Achas. And the minute that you leave Machaneh Achas, you're already metami begadim. Gentlemen, do you see how beautiful the global awareness of the interrelationship of every different issue in the Torah, how it reflects on each other? It's astounding. It's absolutely just like, once you see the whole thing, you just sit there, It's so funny because when you start, it's like so weird, what does that mean? What is that one? And how does that add up with the other one? It's just like this big mishmash of everything standing on its own and confusing you as if we were setting out to confuse you. And when you get this holistic picture of the whole thing, each thing is just humming with its own interrelated harmonies with everything else. It's fabulous. Okay, so then this is a beautiful drasha. How in the world could Rabbi Shimon argue Rabbi Shimon says, no, they're only going to be metame when they're actually burning. I mean, so what is he going to do with this? Well, how does he explain this mechutz l'machane? Since it obviously is not really coming to tell me where. So Rabbi Shimon, hi mechutz l'machane, my avidle. So what does he understand it to be teaching us? Ah, Rabbi Shimon says, in the Braita we see, miboyle l'kiratanya. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ne'emar Khan, it says by the Par Yom HaKippurim and the Sur Yom HaKippurim, uses the Loshon of Michutz L'machane. Now you forgot there's another Michutz L'machane that has nothing to do with the Mokom HaDeshen. There's no Shefach HaDeshen, but there is a Sreifa Michutz L'machane. Well, what do you know? And where do you think that is? Our old standby, which is half of the picture of Yom HaKippurim, Pora Aduma. So when it's said to be burning the Pora Aduma, Michutz L'machane, V'nemar Lahalan Michutz L'machane. So then that, the Torah never told me where to burn the Pora Aduma. I just said, Michutz L'machane. Okay, so maybe I take it out of the Beis HaMikdash and I burn it on the Har HaBayit, you know? So where do I know how to do that? Makan Chutz L'Shalash Machane is just like over here when it says Michutz L'machane that we just showed you, that the real meaning is Chutz L'Shalash Machane. So Afkan Chutz L'Shalash Machane. And then that means that it's got to be with the Pora Aduma as well, aflahalan chutz l'shalash machanais. But then we turn around and we learn out from the Pora Aduma where exactly this Shefach HaDeshen is, which, says Reb Shimon, you guys don't know. But I know because I didn't use this to tell me what you think. I used it to tell me what it's talking about. Where do you get this idea that it's talking about the Tuma? It's a continuation of the discussion of where to be sorefit. So let's be intelligent about it. It's coming to give you the one piece of missing information, which is, and where is that? You tell me, make it in a place, but where? I mean, there's like a lot of places it could be. Do I go to the north? Do I go to the east? Do I go to the west? Does it matter where I go? It's coming to tell me, indeed, it does matter, because just now we learn it backwards from the Pora Aduma. Just like the Pora Aduma, the Torah describes where you are. And where are you? You are facing the Pesach Ohel Moed, because that's where you have to be Zurich the Dam, towards the Pesach Ohel Moed. That gives you not too many options, because you've got to be in the east, directly across from the Beis HaMikdash, in order to be able to be facing west towards the Pesach of the Ohel Moed. Now you know where the Shefach HaDeshen also is. It's got to be Mimizrach HaShe Yerushalayim. So Makan Malahalan by Par Aduma, it's Mimizrach HaShe Yerushalayim. Afkan v'mizrach asher Yerushalayim. Oh my gosh. So then that means, according to the Chachomim that argue on Rabbi Shimon, and they say that the Pasuk of Mechutz L'machane has nothing to do with the Pora Aduma, and it's not a comparison to the Pora Aduma, then where in the world was the Shefach HaDeshen? I mean, if it wasn't to the east, which way did you go? So v'rabbonin heches ariflu, where indeed? In which direction do you go? Kidatanya, the Rabbanan indeed, as it turns out, the actual placement of the Mokom HaDeshen turns out to be a tremendous practical difference, la halacha, between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, something that in a million years would never have occurred to you that has to do with the Machlokas about whether they're Metame immediately or not. It turns out that it's directly correlated. And therefore, Hecha Nisrafin, says the Braita, which is going according to the Chachamim, Litzvona Shel Yerushalayim, because since we're talking about over here, Karbanot Chatat, and all the Aveda V'chatas is Bitzofain, and even remember when we were talking about where the Kohen was Sarif as Hapora and so on, where are these places located? And Bitzvona of the Azora, in order to remind them that it's a Chatas and Avedos are Bitzofain. Exactly. So then if that's the case, a chatas should be, as opposed to Pora Aduma, a real chatas should be litzvona shel Yerushalayim, and as we just saw, chutz l'shalash machanas. Rabbi Yossi says, hey, wait a minute. It's not just a matter of a place, okay? It's a matter of a place that warrants the name of Beit HaDeshen, or Shefach HaDeshen. Well, I mean, doesn't that mean that it had to have been previously a place of Deshan? In other words, you can't just take it out and bring it to a place, Bitzvon Yerushalayim, or wherever it is, and say, I hereby dub thee the Shefach HaDeshen. And now I will pour the Deshen on the Shefach HaDeshen to make it the Shefach HaDeshen. That's crazy. It's saying over here, you're supposed to pour it on something that already was a Shefach HaDeshen. So therefore, it's an additional requirement besides the geographical location. It has to be a place that I've already put down at that place. Now, would never occur to us, this is absolutely brilliant, that the actual Hotzas HaDeshen is necessary in order to do the Aveda of the Sreif of the Parvah Serev Yom HaKippurim. Because we are really going to be putting it on the Shefach HaDeshen of the very Trumas HaDeshen and Hotzas HaDeshen that we took out, that we made such a big fuss over about whether we need the pious, we don't need the pious, and everything else. We started the Masechet with it. It turns out that that is a necessary prerequisite, according to Rabbi Yossi, to even have the Mokum to be Mekayim the Mitzvah of Sreifa al Shefach HaDeshen. Sheesh. Omar Rava. Well, I mean, it seems that, I mean, the Tanakhama didn't agree with that. Because, I mean, that's the whole point Rabbi Yossi is making. How come you guys are leaving out the other requirement? You're only talking about Kotzer Shalosh Machanos. You're only talking about the direction. And you didn't even mention how important it is that it be a Shefach HaDeshen. So how do you ignore that? Who is that person? But first of all, it's Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov who argues on that. D'Tanya. Because we have another price that actually examines the posik of El Shefach HaDeshen Yisarev. So indeed, the Tanakhama says exactly what Rabbi Yossi implies. Sheyehele Sham Deshen, that means there's got to be Deshen there before we come out to do the Sreifa of the Parvasoyim. Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov says that's not what it means. It means Sheyehe Mikomo Mishupach. It means Shefach. That's what it's stressing. It needs to be a place where ashes will roll. So that means it's not a flat surface. It's a diagonal surface. And that when we put something on it, it's going to blow off. So, okay, so apparently Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, that's not what Shefach HaDeshen means, what you say, that there has to be Deshen. It means that it has to be a hill type of thing. I mean, I don't know that they're arguing here about the point of whether you need Deshen. Maybe it's just that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is adding an additional requirement. I mean, Rabbi Yossi said you need to have Deshen because it's called Shefach HaDeshen. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying, and it also has to be a mokom that is shofech. So that, but I'm not arguing about the fact that they're needed to be used once upon a time. You have to put down their Deshen. So I don't see how you can identify specifically that it's Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. I mean, look, bottom line is, if we have in the bright an indication that there's actually a machlokas between an unnamed Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi, and the only other person that we find is Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who gives us another meaning to the pasuk, it's very possible that is the person that maybe also does argue on the Deshen. But let's not be too sure about that. If we ever find Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov saying something else, benogea, the actual din, that there needs to be Deshen, it's certainly not going to be a contradiction to what it is that he's saying here. Tana Rabbanan, v'hasoreif. So now, the pasuk now talks about the whole idea of v'hasoreif otam, yechabes begadav, v'rachatzit besaro b'mayim, v'achareichen yavo el hamachane. So what we'd like to know is exactly what we see in this pasuk that tells us when the moment of tuma happens. And that we discussed. But if you hold that it's only the Sreifa per se, how long does that process continue? Suppose different people are involved in that process. In other words, obviously, if you hold it's taking them out of Yerushalayim, fine. But if you hold it to din in the Sreifa, so then Achi Yatzi Tu'ur and so on and so forth, what different things that you might be doing, what would be included in the Hasoreif? So certainly the Pasuk stresses Hasoreif. I mean, it doesn't say, you know, just carrying it. It's Hasoreif is Metame Begadim. Not the guy who just lights the fire there originally. So suppose I go out and I do the job of lighting the fire to make sure that when he arrives, he can go right ahead and he can put on the busser onto the fire. It's, I'm not chayev, not the matzita ta'or. Okay, how about the guy who arranges the whole thing? He puts all of the wood there and he leaves a place for the varim to be burned. Not him. V'lo ha-misader et ha-ma'aracha. And that would mean even if he goes ahead and he puts the actual Evarim on the, oh gosh, he puts the actual Evarim onto this thing, because that's a Besadur Samarcha with the Evarim. So, oh my gosh. So if he put the Evarim on and somebody else does the lighting, is he's not included? That's how most learn. Others learn even if he puts it on, but he doesn't actually add anything to the fire. He doesn't turn the meat over. He doesn't do anything to it. That's a machlokas. But the soreif is one who actually does that. He turns the meat over and he sees to it that it's actually burned. Ezo soreif dafka misayeya b'sha'at sreifa. Now, suppose they're already burned, right? And this guy wants to make sure that they're super duper finished up. Everything is reduced to absolute ash. And he continues to poke in the fire and so on. So yochal af mishenasu efer metamim begadim. So you could think that anybody who is part of burning that last bit is also going to be betame. Talmud lomar soreif otam. Otam means they need to be recognizably the parvis soyer that he's burning. So only otam or metame begadim. But once they're nasu efer, they're no longer recognizable. Velomi shenasu efer metame begadim, and therefore there will be no tuma at that point. So says the Tanakhama. But Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Shimon Omer, hapar mitamei, it's the par and the soyer that becomes tamei, only as a par. Otam means the par v'sa'ir. That means they have to be in the same state that they were. Once it's nitach habosar, forget about turning into ashes. Once it's nitach habosar, once what you're looking at is not a par, but the charred wreckage of a par, so even though it's recognizably it, but I mean, for heaven's sakes, it's not going to be metame begadim anymore. My binayu, the difference between them is ika binayu the shavya charucha. When you've got a charred body, you say, well, I obviously recognize that it's a charred, burned par or charred, burned soyer, but it's not ashes. It doesn't have to be ashes. It's no longer a par. It's no longer a soyer. And at that point, somebody comes along and he starts poking and makes a bigger fire and sees to it that it's reduced to Afer. He will not be Matame. That's the Nafkamina between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. And now, guess who we're ready for? And as part of the treat, we actually get a participation of a face, of a video. Now, despite the fact that it's a bit shorn and may not be recognizable as our captain in his long sea journeys, who usually has his hair down to his knees and so on, but nonetheless, this is definitely our capitan, and he's ready to give us his recital, and he even broke from whatever bowl of cereal or whatever you're doing in the background or sleeping when you keep that video on. I knew it. So go ahead.
You know, there's no barbers in Finland, Rabbi, so I have to, you know, I have to make sure that when I come back, I'm still, you know, in a formal.
I get it. Wow. That was quite a swan song before leaving to Finland. Omru lo le Kohen Gadol. So then they bring the news to the Kohen Gadol. He gia sa'ir la midbar. The Seir has arrived at the Midbar. Why is this important? Because he has to stay in the Azara, because he's still being Isaac in the Aveda. Vishilachot HaMidbara is part of his job. So you're saying, okay, but I mean, what more can he do? There is no more that he can do. It is being done. But that process of Vishilachot HaMidbara is Mechayev him to be still Isaac in that Aveda. The moment that he walks out of the Azara, which is actually the next thing that he's going to have to be doing, is it would only be if he knows that he finished that part of the Aveda. Now, when he does the next step and he's going to be reading from the Sefer Torah and he's going to be in the Ezra's Nashim, he has no right to go out to the Ezra's Nashim while he's being Isaac in the Aveda. And therefore, until he's given the good news, he can't move. And the Gemara is going to explain how, the Mishnah is going to explain in a moment how we know that that's true. I mean, how in the world, were they carrying a cell phone on Yom Kippur to let him know that the Seir arrived? Minayin hayu yodim shigia. This is like a parenthetical. They told him higia. How did they know? So minayin hayu yodim shigia seir lemidbar. Ah, dirka otayu osim. They had these, it's a machlokas, what the Lashon of Dirkaot is, what the Lashon of Dirkaot is actually like little watch towers or watch stones or watchers, like the people who Lamaisa were standing on some type of elevated platform. And this was in between the Sukkot, not only at the Sukkot, so they were able to clearly see the person at the next one of these watchtowers. And they would have these flags that they would wave. So the moment that they had identified the Higea LaMidbar, we'll see what that Midbar means. It doesn't mean it got all the way to the Tzuk. Higea LaMidbar, they would know. So the Yodin Shigea Seir LaMidbar, and they could bring the word back to the Kohen Gadol. So this was, forget about telephones, they had optical cables, for heaven's sake. So they knew right away that the Seir had gotten to the Midbar. Omar Rebbe Yehuda, I understand, why in the world do we need any of that? I mean, it's very easy to know when the Seir got to the Midbar, because remember, we had these Yekirei Yerushalayim that were going to accompany them, right? So they can only accompany them, according to Rebbe Meir, according to Ara Tana Kamma, they accompany them for one meal, because that's the maximum out of the Trum. So they can go up to one meal, and then they turn around. They come back to Yerushalayim. Now that's two meal. And the distance of the time that it takes to get not to the Tzuk, but to know that they got to the beginning of the Midbar is only one additional meal. And that is so shocking to anyone who actually drives out of Yerushalayim, and within a few minutes he's finding himself in the Midbar, which is crazy. And sure enough, so you know exactly how long it takes. One meal there, one meal back, wait an additional one meal. So, okay, the Mizman of Alicha, the meal, we know that Machlok is 18 minutes, you know, 22 minutes, 18 minutes that we do. And pretend you're baking matzahs, you know. So three runs of matzahs, and you already know that it's gotten out to the Midbar. Yodim Shigya Sar LaMidbar. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, what did you need that for? You had another wonderful siman, because you had the Lashon Shel Zuhurit. And remember, in the early days, the Lashon Shel Zuhurit was posted at the actual Pitcho Shel Heichal. So the moment that the Sawyer would get to the Midbar, he held that the Lashon would be Malbin even before you were Zorek the Sawyer, which was, of course, our problem. And that is because that was the conclusion of the Aveda. You see how the whole thing dovetails now. Because the Kohen Gadol has to stay there until the conclusion of his Aveda. And the conclusion of his Aveda was actually Higea LaMidbar, because it doesn't say that he should send it L'Azazel. It says Vishilach Oto HaMidbara. And then it goes L'Azazel. So once it's finished, it's finished. Okay, so then already the Lashon would be Malbin right then. Shenemarim Yuchata Echem Kashanim Kashaleg Yalbinu. Amen. Keni Ratzon. Omer Abaye. Shmamina, so you see from here that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the meaning is when it got to Beit Chidudo, which, I mean, sounds like the place where it's going to go right down a cliff, you know, Chidudo means like right at that sharp area. The Beit Chidudo is the space of that, which means the moment you get to the very beginning of the Midbar, that's it. And you don't need to have more than that. So Kamashmala, that Rabbi Yehuda holds, that Kivan Shigea Seir LaMidbar, that is Naset Mitzvato, that's the mitzvah that was on the Kohen Gadol, that is the Vishilacho to HaMidbara, and now he's ready to move on to going outside and reading the Sefer Torah, which begins our next parak. That's what you see from here. And this, of course, introduces the one and only
Maybe we made a major point of the significance of the Deshen and the Avodah of Yom Kippur. Could Rebbe wrap that up?
You just did. Thank you so much. So now we have our Kapitan, and we are about to be Hadron Alok Shnei Sirei Zim. Here we go.
I'm not sure I'm going to be Saturday night for the whole shiur because I got to go and do my bidika at the airport. Don't ask.
Sounds a little bit testing.
Thank you. Testing, right? testy.
All right, so we're funking on the Hilik Perek, and here we go. Now I understand why Doc ran away, huh? So our Perek begins. Balo Kohen Gadol Likrot. And so now the next stage is the Kohen Gadol has arrived into the Ezra's Nashim, and he is going to be reading from the Parsha of Achrimot and more, as we'll see. Now, he could just walk out with his Bigdei Lavan, which, of course, he's been wearing. That was the last thing that he was wearing, because he was doing all of the Aveda, the Parvah Seir, which needs to be done with Bigdei Lavan. But if he wants to, he could continue reading with those Bigdei Lavan. He doesn't have to take them off, the Imlav. But if he doesn't want to read wearing the Bigdei Lavan, he can read even in his own clothes. I mean, you know, you read it something that is befitting, maybe an Itz Tlit Lavan. From here, we actually learn that there's an inyan for wearing white on Yom Kippur. So Dafket stresses white. I mean, we get white, certainly not an ikuva in terms of baguette. So apparently the appropriate attire for Yom Kippur is to be wearing an Itz Tlit Lavan. And the Chazan HaKnesset, Notel Sefer Torah. So now, remember the word Chazan in those days meant basically the Shamash. So he would be the person that was in charge of locking things up, taking things out, cleaning things, and so on and so forth. And there was a shul that was right there that was on the Har HaBayit right next to the Ezra's Nashim. And he would take out the Sefer Torah. And this was a Sefer Torah, not the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, but one of the Sifrei Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, and it was used not for the Bedikah of all the others for him, but this is the Sefer that's called, according to those who have the Girsa, Sefer HaAzara, as opposed to Sefer Ezra, so that the Sefer here was the Sefer kept next to the Azara, the Ezra's Nashim, and it was a Sefer, says Rashi, it was written by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. He would take this out specifically for the Kriya on Yom HaKippurim, which is, of course, Moshe's day. So it only makes sense that we would be using Moshe's own Sefer. Boy, what a feeling that must have been. Oh, my God. And he would hand it over to the Rosh HaKnesset, not to be confused with the Rosh HaKnesset. And the Rosh HaKnesset was what we would call the Gabbai. You can lift up your hands over there, Gabbai. It was the Gabbai, and Rashi says he's the guy that would decide who reads Maftir, who's Boris HaShma. Classic functions of the Gabbai, right? So he would give it to this gun, and that was the one that was standing there right next to always getting the Kohen Gadol nervous in case anything happens to him. We know he's taking over. And the Kohen Gadol would stand up because now he's in the presence of the Sefer Torah, and you can't be makabel the Sefer Torah sitting down. He would stand up. By the way, we're going to be talking about, what do you mean stand up? I thought you're not allowed to be sitting down anyway in the Azara. All of this we'll discuss. So he would stand up. He would be makabel the Sefer of Moshe from the Sagan, the Koray, and then he would read for the entire Tzibur. He would read Achrimot, which is all of what we read in Achrimot, and then he would read the next parsha. He would read from Emor Ach Be'asar L'Chodesh HaShvi'i Hazeh, and then he would be Golel the Sefer Torah, and he would keep it next to him against his chest, and he would say, look, there's much more written over here, but I'm not going to make you sit and wait for me to do Galila to the correct place, okay? Because that's Tircha Tzibur. We're going to talk about that in the Gemara. In those days, they actually cared about such things. So he would hold it, and he would say, don't think there's anything chaser chaser shalom in the Sefer Torah. Yoter mi mashikarati liftechem katuvkan. And then he would read Parshas Pinchas from Aftir, the Ba'asar Shebechumash HaPkudim, that he would be Korei Alpeh, and that's the Parsha of the Musafim. And then he would read, and not outside of the Sefer. And then he would finish up the Kriyas HaTorah. He also made a bracha before. And this the Rishonim discussed, why is it that the Mishnah didn't want to discuss the bracha that he made before and only discuss the bracha he makes after? Fine, but we'll talk about this later. U'mevarech alei shmoneh brachot. And he makes, instead of the normal single bracha that is made over the Kriya of the Sefer Torah, he says 8 different brachas. And indeed, the Girsa of the Rambam is Mevorech Acharea Shmona Brachot. And Rambam lists the normal Birchas HaTorah that he makes before separately. But La'acharei he makes eight brachas. The first time he makes normal bracha of Al HaTorah, which is the bracha that we always say, Asher Natan Lanu Torah Demet, and so on and so on. Then he makes the bracha on the Aveda, so that bracha of Aveda that starts off with Ritzei, and this is the marker of what some people do when they change the nusach of Ritzei on this occasion to Otcha Levatcha B'Yirah Na'avod, because that was the girsa in the Beis HaMikdash of the Ritzei that the Kohen Gadol would say. And then he said Modim, which comes, of course, after Ritzei. We learned this out from a pasuk that the Avoda relates to Hodah, that's Zoveach Todah Yechab Nani, as you'll recall. Then he makes a special bracha on the Mechilas Oven, which we also say, except we make that the closure of the bracha that we say in the Shemona Esrei, B'chol Avosenu B'yom HaKippurim HaZeh, and then it's Melech Mochel V'Soleach L'Avonosenu V'Lamot Amo Yisrael, and so on and so forth. And that's the bracha that they say there after the Kriya. Then he makes a special bracha for the Bechira of the Beis HaMikdash. So Al HaMikdash B'fnei Atzmo, that is called, remember, the Beis HaBechira, and the bracha is HaBocher BaMikdash. And that's separately from the Bechira of Klal Yisrael, the Al Yisrael B'fnei Atzma, and that is the mitzvah of HaBocher B'Yisrael. These are specific elements of Bechira. The gears that we have is Al Yerushalayim B'fnei Atzma, however, that would put it over the number and isn't listed by the Rambam. It's not listed in the Brisa either. So it might be a mistake here in the Mishnah as well. Ve'al ha-kohanim b'fnei atzmam. So each one of these are bechira issues. Ha-bocher b'zaro shel Aaron, because each one of these are actually specific havdolos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes from other places. Ve'al shar ha-tvila, and then the regular bracha on tvila, which the Gemara is going to discuss. What is that referring to? Now, just you should know that if you are able to see the Kohen Gadol and hear the Kriya of the Kohen Gadol, then you will not be a witness to the burning of the Parvasoyer. Eino ro'e Parvasoyer ha-Nisrafim. And if you were able to watch the Parvasoyer ha-Nisrafim, there was no way that you could have heard the Kriya from the Kohen Gadol, because those things take place simultaneously and at a significant distance from each other. There'd be no way you could get there. And this is not because you're not allowed to. I mean, there's nothing wrong with your being able to be in two places at once. If you manage it, that's fine. So let me play Shaino Rishai. Ela Shaita Derech Rechoka, which is quite a distance, so we'd love to see you pull the trick. Umalechet Shneim Shavaka Achat, and what it was taking place simultaneously. So go for it, absolutely. Now, Midiktani Be'itzlit Lavan Mishalo. It says in the Mishnah he could be wearing his own personal white robe. Okay, so then that tells you clearly that the act of Kriya cannot be an Aveda, because an Aveda has to be done in Big Day Kuna. So how could you be wearing Big Day Chol? Michlal de Kriya lav Avodahi. That means that this reading for the Sefer Torah is not called an Aveda. And yet, the Mishnah insists at the beginning, he came out in his Big Day Lavan, and if he wants to continue wearing his Big Day Lavan, he is perfectly justified in wearing his Big Day Lavan. Oh, whoa, wait a minute. Aren't the Big Day Kuhuna Kodesh? And if you use them for something that it's not a chiyuv to use them, wouldn't that be Me'ila? That can you just sit around wearing the Big Day Kuhuna where they're not necessary? Apparently, you can. Shmat Mina, I mean, if that's the case, if they're not necessary, and nonetheless you're allowed to be wearing them, then that means that the big open question that we've had for all these years as to whether that is indeed okay, you see from here, yes. How come nobody brought a raya? Big Day Kuhuna nitnu le'anotam. Seems to be very clear in the Mishnah. You are allowed to use the Big Day Kuhuna. So, all right, if you want to go to a concert in the Big Day Kuhuna, go right ahead. Want to go to a restaurant in the Big Day Kuhuna? I mean, make a splash. What the heck? You know, oh my gosh, here comes the Kohen Gadol. All right? Is that true? Says the Gemara, well, I mean, let's not overdo it, you know. I mean, Dilma Shiny. What's that?
After game, maybe. Can you imagine going to a basketball
game? Oh my God. So Dilma Shiny Kriya, maybe there's something special about the Kriya. I mean, I understand it's not an Aveda, but I mean, it's a very important thing that is part of the Tzorach Aveda. I mean, all of this is what I need to do on Yom Kippur. So, I understand it's appropriate to wear big dekuna for all of the things that you're going to be doing if they're not technically classified as an Aveda. But, I mean, it doesn't mean you can go to a basketball game. So you can't bring a raya from here that there's no iser in using the big dekuna for anything. The reason that we're into this is because the Boilo, this is a long-standing question. Are big dekuna mutter for hana? Big dekuna nitnu lehanot b'hem or lo nitnu lehanot b'hem? Can you or can you not use them for other things? Now, we know that, as the Gemara says, that the lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharet. Look, there's no possible way to define the exact instant that I rip off the big dekuna from myself the moment I finish the Aveda, like as if 1 minute I'm dressed and 1 minute I'm not. I mean, that's not physically possible unless you're a malach asharet. The Torah was given to people, and people are always going to be taking a break. I mean, you know, what am I going to do? I need to go to the bathroom or whatever. I mean, you know, it just takes a minute. So obviously, I'm not going to be male in just using it. The question is whether there was an actual Tanai of Bezdin in terms of the Hagdashah, the original Hagdashah, where we buy this from money of the Tzibor that is Kadesh. Do we make a Tanai Bezdin to say that the Hagdashah is almanat, that somebody should be able to use them in general? Or is it just that, by definition, there's no me'ila because they're not considered to be kodshei Hashem because they can't be miyuchad? Kodshei Hashem means entirely la'Hashem. But then that would mean that the Kohen Gadol had to be a malach hasharis. There couldn't have been one instant of a human wearing it just because he's wearing it. I mean, what about the moments that it takes him? Maybe he's a little tired and he unbuttons his clothes a little slowly. So he's going to, obviously he can't mean that. So therefore, it's ipso facto not in the Tchum of Me'ila. But the question is, that's not the same thing as saying that there's no Isser to be Nene. We often find Eino Moel Be'em, but it's Osir Le'anot. So that's our question. Was there actually a Tanai that said, look, these big dekuna are really meant to be your begadim, and you can use them? They're, obviously, you should be miyachid them for the Dover Choshev of the Aveda, but you can use them as necessary. That's the question. Toshma says the Gemara, well, couldn't we bring a raya from the Mishnah and Tamid? It says that the Kohanim didn't sleep in their big dekuna. Now, I mean, understand that to sleep in something, I mean, that's, you know, even in your normal clothes, you don't sleep. I mean, it's, you know, sleep is not the kind of thing that is nice for wearing clothes for many reasons. And therefore, we understand, of course, they didn't sleep in their clothes. But, I mean, mashma, they could eat in their clothes. So, I mean, maybe they could go to a restaurant in the clothes. And there's, you know, it's okay. They're eating. Yes, that's true. But eating is very important. Remember, the Kohanim eat, and that's part of the actual kapora. So Dilma Shaini Achila, the Tzorach Avoda here, because since it says in the Pasuk, V'achlu otam asher kupar b'hem, Kiritanya. What's the meaning of that Pasuk? Melamed shakohanim ochlimu ba'alim mitchaprim. The Kohanim eat, and in the course of that Achila, it's actually part of the Etzem Kapora. So obviously it's okay. I mean, it's certainly just as good as laning, which isn't part of the Aveda. I mean, over here, it's mamish part of the kapora. Okay, fine. All right, so let's be medaic something else. They didn't sleep, but, I mean, they could, like, take a nice walk around town. So, they could take a walk around town. Well, not necessarily. The truth is that maybe the Mishnah should have said they're not allowed to even take a walk in the big dekuna. Then why did you stress they didn't sleep? Because you're only telling me half of the story. Continue reading. What does it say? Lo ayu yishenim bebig dekuna, but, sefet strichalei, but they would take off their big dekuna, they would fold their big dekuna, and they would put it under their heads. Now, of course, tomorrow the Gemara is going to say, well, then there's your answer. If you can use your big dekuna as a pillow, so obviously you're allowed to use your big dekuna for tzorachol. That we'll talk about. But in any event, this idea that even though you're not allowed to sleep in it, we're not mocked at it being under your head, that's a big chiddush. Now we'll talk about the implications of that chiddush per se to the question about whether nitnu le'anot b'hem or lo nitnu le'anot b'hem.